Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLachlan. Jay McLachlan is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLachlan and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLachlan stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLachlan's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLachlan's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLachlan. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLachlan is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital Z Zibby 20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLachlan. Thanks so much. Welcome to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books with Zibby. I'm the host, Zibby Owens. I am an author. My latest is blank, pub date March 1st, a novel. I'm also a podcaster, obviously, a publisher, a bookstore owner, and so much more. If you love books, you're in the right place. In fact, we call it the Zibbyverse, or really, the LA Times called it the Zibbyverse, and we're going with it. Go to ZibbyOwens.com to learn more and follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens. David Duchovny is the author of The Reservoir, a novella. He is an award-winning actor, writer, director, New York Times bestselling author, and singer-songwriter. With an acting career spanning more than 3 decades, Duchovny is a 2-time Golden Globe winner and 4-time Emmy nominee. He is the author of 4 previous novels, Truly Like Lightning, Holy Cow, Bucky Effing Dent, and Miss Subways. Duchovny adapted his novel, Bucky Effing Dent, into a film he also directed, which premiered at the 2023 Tribeca Film Festival. As a musician, he has released 3 studio albums, Hell or High Water, Every Third Thought, and Gesture Land. The Reservoir is his most recent book. Welcome, David. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss The Reservoir, a novella.
Well, I had the moms in mind because I know they don't have time to read books, but maybe they have time to read a novella.
Totally. I was like, oh, this I can do for sure. If I can't get through a novella. One time I was on a plane and I wrote like, all, you know, this whole long thing. And I was like, is this a book? How do I know if it's a novella? And I was searching. Yeah. How do you know if it's how many words is a novella versus a book?
Yeah, it's not a rule by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a thing. Like, I did the same thing because I was like, is this a story? Or I know it's not a novel. But is it a long, short story or is it, oh, it's a novella is such a nice old fashioned kind of term. I like a novella. It's like a popsicle, you know, like a diminutive of something. I like it.
Totally. I think novellas need to make a comeback, actually, because you're right. I mean, you can read them faster.
They fit in your back
pocket. Yeah.
You can put it in your back pocket like your J.D. Salinger short stories, you know?
Just totally. You feel more literary just even holding it.
Yeah, just put it on your table.
We were just talking about the Reservoir itself, and I'm being from New York, grown up going to the Reservoir, which plays a central role in the story. And I remember my lacrosse team in middle school, we had to cradle the ball, running around the entire Reservoir. Right. Anyway, I've been there many, many a time.
Yeah, sure.
As all New Yorkers pretty much have, because it's such a pretty place. But it takes a very dark role in your story. Yeah. Talk a little bit about what the Reservoir is about and when and why and how you were inspired to write it.
Well, I grew up on 11th Street and 2nd Avenue, so I was not really a park guy, but I did go to school, as I mentioned to you, at Collegiate, which was on the Upper West Side. So I played baseball in the park. I got to know the park a little bit in high school, even though, it was really just hanging out with my new friends from high school who lived up there. But it was never a central part of my life. It was really when I moved, I raised my kids when we moved to New York, and I lived on Central Park West there, and I had that view of the Reservoir, and I really got to know the park a little better. And it featured somewhat in a novel I wrote called Miss Subways. And so always kind of feeding my imagination from that point on, because it was this weird thing. Having grown up, as I said, downtown, it just wasn't really part of my life. And then, to realize you have this huge thing in the middle of this, asphalt jungle, right? And it's hard to imagine the city without it. And yet it's not really a place for people who are outside the city. Maybe it's a nice place to take a walk or whatever, but it's not really what people come to for New York. But I think it's really what people that live in Manhattan rely on in many ways. It's kind of like a safety valve, or just like to release pressure in a way. And so I really began to kind of get into it that way. And then it was during the pandemic, and I had this great view, of the Reservoir and of Fifth Avenue across the way. And during the pandemic, there was really nothing much to do but look out that window, right? And I was just kind of, the story just kind of came to me, in bits, rear window. Like, what if somebody was in one of those windows, Fifth Avenue across the way? And then, the pandemic, the nature of the pandemic, reminding me of Death in Venice, and all the discussion and the awareness of the proximity to actual people. 6 feet was this magical kind of a distance, and it was very new, obviously, to all of us, but not historically, right? There've been plagues or whatever, and people have, a lot of literature has come out of plagues, Canterbury Tales is the backdrop of that is a plague. They're going on a pilgrimage during a plague. Castle of Cross Destinies by Italo Calvino is kind of set in a castle during a lockdown of sorts, and obviously Death in Venice, Aschenbach, the protagonist of that, doesn't really heed the lockdown. He's kind of pursuing his obsession of Tadzio, the young Polish kid in Venice, and not paying heed to the fact that he shouldn't be eating those strawberries or, hanging out at all. He should go back home. So that all just kind of, coalesced into some kind of, modern day story of a lockdown. It kind of helped me, because it seems like whenever we go through things these days in terms of the media, everything, it seems like, oh, it's the first time this has ever happened. we kind of tell ourselves we're in uncharted territory, when I'm not sure that that's true, most of the time. And so it wasn't true this time. And I thought, well, there's some old wisdom there. There's stories to be told through these kinds of times, that relate down the ages and relate to ourselves now. So that's kind of just what I thought I was doing when I started it.
Interesting. It doesn't have the same feel, though, as a typical, this is about lockdown, because it's so much the interior life, right? This is about sort of your grasp on reality and what happens when it starts slipping, and the city of New York, and so much more. And you even link it with 9/11 and just other things that have brought the city to its knees, and how we keep recovering. So,
well, also it was, what's different about lockdown in our age is that in the old literature has people in lockdown telling each other stories. That's kind of like the the way into the work is, okay, we're all sitting around a campfire. We can't go anywhere. We've already exposed ourselves to one another. So, you know, this is we're either going to die or we're not. So let's tell each other stories. And the difference between this lockdown was that we had our screens and we had connection to the outside world in, you know, an unprecedented intense way, you know, where we had more information in 30 seconds than people would have gotten in a lifetime, you know, yes. some other age. So that's the different reality that we do live in. And so that spawns, obviously that had spawned and that continues to spawn conspiratorial, you know, thinking and no, basically conspiracies to me are just stories that people are telling. So it's very similar. You know, people started telling stories during the lockdown by talking about conspiracies, you know, fictionalized, trying to make fictionalized sense of what they saw going on around them. So I thought, well, this is interesting to kind of go inside the lockdown. You know, we're all kind of locked down in our own minds anyway, right? That's mm-hmm. the way we live. We're isolated in some way. And then to what do you allow in? You know, aside from being 6 feet away, can't allow the physical in. But, you know, what's your screen for the screen? You know, what? And this guy, you know, as he gets lonelier, psychologically sicker, he also gets physically sicker. And there's all these kinds of, you know, symptom or symbol is a question in the book. So there's all these kinds of like, well, what is an actual sickness and what is a mental sickness? And, you know, all these kinds of questions that arise.
Yeah. And of course, the pandemic sort of makes all of us go out of our minds a little bit. I mean, I can't even imagine without the phones, although I feel like there was quite a negative perception of the phone in the story and how it ends up, you know.
Absolutely. No, I mean, I'm an old fuddy-duddy that way. You know, I'm from a different generation. So it's like not native to me. Like even mm-hmm. the way my kids treat it is different from the way I treat it. I mean, sure, it's convenient and everything. But I can't imagine a way in which it's made my life better. I mean, if I got into trouble somewhere and I need to make a call, that would be great. It hasn't happened yet, you know.
But in the story, of course, like when he is in trouble, he's like, I know my kids like taught me, what am I supposed to press? Like two buttons, what am I supposed to do?
Well, the phone does come in handy because he throws it at the guy and he hits him.
Of course, so, I know.
So I think the way a phone can really come in handy is if you use it as a defensive
weapon. Yeah.
Only defensive, though.
Okay, defensive weapon. Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't even know why I carry mace. I mean, yeah. It's like a total waste.
Don't need that bear. Just need a solid iPhone.
Exactly. You had. Can I read a passage that I thought was so awesome?
Sure.
Okay, this is about New York again. You say, thousands of windows lighting up now like rectangular hearts beating, contagious to one another, multiplying exponentially until it seemed the entire ghostly lockdown city and all its cordoned off lonely people had begun communicating again, crying, I see you, I see you, I see you. Reaching out to one another across the dark moat of a park. It struck him as beautiful to behold, the city confusing itself for a Christmas tree, seeking connection through the speed of light, tired of this smothering killjoy pandemic and its careful puritanical distances. Ridley Elementary backstroked cheerfully as an otter, and glancing down south, he watched in awe as the Empire State Building winked at the Chrysler Building, and the Chrysler winked and flirted shamelessly back, that mile-high, glamorous, silver Art Deco couple, like a strange royalty reuniting before his eyes. The city was falling in love with itself again, coming back to life, and he felt honored to bear witness. That's gorgeous. That is a gorgeous passage.
Thanks. I'm thinking, when I was listening to it, I was like, yeah, it's a lot of adjectives, buddy. You know, but
really? Oh my gosh. I thought you would be thinking, wow, did I write that? That was so beautiful.
Oh, it did. It gave me goosebumps kind of just because I like that, not necessarily the writing, but I like the idea. You know, I like, it reminds me of that moment or those days or that month or that year when the city just started to come out of the pandemic, you know, and there really was because New Yorkers, you know, we complain about everything about New York. We claim to love it, but we just complain about it. And at that point, it was just like love. You know, it was just like, yeah, we're out of, you know, the streets are fucking filthy and crowded. And yeah. It's all great. You know, it's like,
yeah,
you know, so there's that moment when you've lost everything and you realize, hey, you know, things were pretty good. Things were pretty good then.
That's true. You
know, fall back. It's like falling in love again, which is what it says in the passage. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
Well, you also, as I mentioned before, you talked about 9/11 and how everything that was important to us became so clear, right? It was so front of mind, like, oh, this is what's important. And then like a year or two later, you're like, oh, well, I've kind of lost hold of that. Everything's just back to the way it was. And you lose that sense of...
Yeah, that's just human nature, I guess, you know, yeah. That we, you know, in I guess intense times tend to make you focus on survival and what's important. So you cut back on the luxurious things, or you cut back on the extraneous things, and you realize, oh yeah, you know, all I need is a peanut butter jelly sandwich and my loved one, whatever, you know what I mean? So, and that's great. You know, if we could hold on to that, that'd be fine. But all of a sudden we're like, I don't really like peanut butter. You know?
I feel like this is a good conversation because I've been complaining so much lately about the city and how it doesn't feel safe lately, and everything's going out of business, and like there's garbage everywhere. I'm like, and I'm always like, should I move? And I'm always like, I'm never going to move. Why do we even talk about this?
Yeah, I moved. You know, I mean, when I grew up, you grew up there too. So yeah, for me, it was enough already. You know, it's like I'll always enjoy going back. But I like the clean slate after a point, too.
I think it may be when my kids are in college.
Well, that's what it was. I didn't leave until my kids were gone. Okay.
Yeah. I've got quite a bit to go. But that's okay. Counting down.
Yeah. Day by day. Day by day.
Another funny thing that you did in the book is, even though, you know, your main character is curmudgeonly in a way, he also sort of defies the typical grandfather stereotype where you think like, oh, the grandparents will be so happy when I call. But here he's like, the grandkids are so annoying. And the last thing I want is for them to get on FaceTime and pretend that they want to talk to me.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I don't have any grandkids, but I imagine they won't want to talk to me
Oh, that's so funny.
My kids barely look at me, so I can't imagine my grandkids want to talk.
Well, that's another interesting part, is his relationship to his daughter. And, you know, as she worries, and obviously he's descending into his own mental stuff, yes. But you know, wanting to figure out how to preserve that relationship. And then there are observations you have just about life, like when you have him sitting on the ground and thinking, how did people like dig graves when the ground was this hard and there were no machines? And I'm like, yeah, right? How did they do that?
They were just tougher than us.
I guess so.
Yeah, you know, if you've ever tried to touch the ground in Central Park in the middle of winter, you're like,
yeah,
it'll just pull your nail right off. So yeah, it was a scene where he's digging for, you know, he's trying to find something to throw at that guy before he throws the iPhone at him.
Yeah.
Trying to find a rock or a pebble, and it's just hard, kind of slaty soil.
I'm embarrassed to admit I did not know that it was once that Central Park was once used as the burial ground for enslaved people. And
not sure that I knew that. Maybe I knew that. I can't remember.
I mean, did you make that up or is that true?
I'm pretty sure I didn't make it up. I know it was a potter's field at some point, which is, you know, for unclaimed bodies or unknown deceased. Yeah, I'm sure I researched that, but I didn't know it. I think I was just researching general facts about Central Park. You know, I think I was researching the reservoir, you know, when it was really last used and, you know, what's the deal with it and all that stuff. So yeah, it's very interesting to the history of New York's very interesting, you know, as any kind of history is, but a big city like that. Yeah. There's a lot of, I mean, that's kind of, the story is kind of getting that too. If you think of like the city as a person, you know, it has this kind of repressed history, unconscious, whatever, things it would rather not think about that it did in the past, things like that. Like if it's a father, you know, mistakes I made, things like that. So the city has kind of a repressed, return of the repressed or an unconscious that when the city is sick, like during the pandemic, then the city also is having hallucinations. You know, that's kind of, he's like the conduit for a city hallucinating in a way. I'm just making that up right now, but it sounds good.
Let's go with it. I like it.
That's what I meant to do.
So what do you want the reader to take away from your story?
Gee, that's, you know, it's like not something, it's a good question, but it's not something I ever ask myself. It's like when I'm writing something, it's just like I'm trying to service the thing itself. You know, what does this thing want to be? I'm not really thinking of the reader. I think I really wanted to kind of have a sympathy for the conspiratorial mind, you know, like I think it's all bullshit, you know, all the Trumpian kind of stuff out there, but I wanted to kind of investigate how it's comforting and how it's attractive, you know, how it can seduce, well, in this case, a sick guy, you know, who's nearing the end on some level knows that and wants the answer, you know, the part of us that wants the answer, you know, and I wanted, you know, the answer is not Jewish space lasers, you know, but I get why I want to write a story in which I had an intelligent man kind of fall prey to the need for it to make sense, you know, because the truth is there really isn't one bad guy. There's not even like a cabal of 10 bad guys, you know, it's just groups of people trying to do their best usually. And some people not doing, you know, some genuinely bad people doing things, but they're not organized. You know, there's no organized conspiracy, and that's just movies and TV. And we want that. We clearly want that, you know, because we want to blame a bad guy. We want to have a hero. We want to have a good guy. But I guess that's what I wanted to do, was like show how when you get lonely, you're susceptible to wanting that, the kind of comfort of the big A answer, the big T truth or whatever. I got it. Now I can move on, you know?
Interesting.
I just answered that to your question. I read this interview with Joyce Carol Oates where she was saying very intelligently, you know, like, I just answered your question. I never thought of that. And I don't even know that I believe what I just said. You know what I mean? Because you're just kind of trying it out.
Yeah. So what do you think? How did it sound?
It sounded okay. It sounded good. Like next week, I might go, yeah, no, that wasn't it, you know?
Okay. Well, just let me know. I'll delete it. Are you working on anything new?
I just started. Yeah, I'm going to do an acting job in Europe today, actually, which is why I was late and just forgetful. And I just started a podcast yesterday. I'm going to do a 10-episode podcast with Lemonada, the podcast company. Yeah. And so I just did my first one yesterday. I was in your position, and it's different. I'd never been the interviewer, and it's a learning process. I got it wasn't quite as smooth as I thought it was going to be. You know, definitely. I mean, maybe if you think back to when you started and to where you are now, you probably have learned a few tricks.
I used to write down all my questions and send them ahead of time. I would do quotes, you know, like I was a kid in school and send all the questions. I did that for years until finally someone came on and was like, why do you send the questions? And I was like, oh, just, you know, to prepare and let you know. And and he was like, I think it would be a lot more fun if you didn't send questions. And then I was like, all right, that would save me some time. So then I stopped. But it helped for a long time. Not that you need that, but it helped me.
Yeah, well, mine's called Fail Better. It's kind of about failure.
Oh.
You know, it's my, you know, the glory and necessity of it and that kind of stuff. And, you know, I don't know what it is.
Do you think people think of, I don't think of you and failure in the same breath. Where does, you know?
Well, that's kind of what I'm talking. I mean, I'm not just talking about myself, but it's, you know, my sense is always, it's never exactly what you thought it was going to be or what you had in mind, no matter what the creation is. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's failure in art or whatever. There's failure in life. There's all different kinds of failure. But I kind of had this idea that I wanted to be talking about, you know, how to shift the perspective on failure as not something to fear, but something to embrace in a way, because that's the only way. That's the only way you move forward, really. Or you could just do the same thing over and over and succeed at that. And, you know, you can live your life that way if you want. But that felt kind of lonely and like not a way to go. So that's just like the vague idea that I have, the discussion I want to have. So it's not like I've got, I'm not saying your job is easy, but like you've got the one book, so you're going to ask about this, right? It's like, for me, I'm just like, it's very hazy. So like, it was an interesting kind of a feeling like, should I get back to what this is supposed to be about? But this is interesting, you know, that kind of.
Yeah. Well, it's your show. You get to do whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, I forgot that. In the moment.
And what is your acting thing in London? Can you say?
It's an Amazon limited series called Malice. And it's kind of wealthy people behaving badly, kind of a deal. You know?
Sounds good.
It seems to be what people want these days.
Yeah, I'll take some of that. And do you write while you're in the midst of acting, shooting, whatever?
I don't generally. I find it hard. I mean, just physically hard, just to have the energy. Mentally, very hard to be able to shift focus like that. I guess, no, the only time I ever wrote while I was acting was when I was doing the X-Files, but then I was writing. I was writing like X-Files, so it kind of was in the same headspace in a way, even though very different kind of motor skill to do one than the other. But generally, no. No, because when I write, I kind of write hard and fast and focused. Mm-hmm. I'm not like a slow writer who can do it over. I'm more of a sprinter when I write. So I can't be carrying something else when I'm sprinting.
Got it. Well, now maybe you can just go back to a short story. We can get shorter and shorter till then you have poems, just poems at the end.
I do have a bunch of poems that I thought about publishing just because it would make me seem like I'm being more productive than I am, you know, because these are poems that I've written over a lifetime, really. And I don't know, I've got to find somebody who'd be interested in publishing them. You know, see, obviously that's not a market, you know, it's got to be, there's like the literary poetry market, which is, you know, you sell 20 copies and it's a hit. Then there's the popular poetry market, which like, I think is basically just Billy Collins and maybe Amanda Gorman. And then I don't know what happens in between, you know?
Well, I guess you could find out.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for aspiring authors?
Well, I mean, the most obvious advice is just, you know, sit your ass down, you know, and write. And that's it. Because it really is, it is a marathon and it is a muscle and it is a way of life, you know? So it may be tired.
Oh my gosh, I don't want like and you really love it, don't you?
Well, there's nothing better than having done it. You know, like I would say that I don't really love writing, but I love having written, you know, like when you come out of it, like if you're just in the space and you've been typing away for a couple hours and you realize that was a couple hours, you know, where I was elsewhere, you know, and it's, even if it's a dark place, you're doing dark work or whatever, it doesn't matter. It feels like a vacation of some kind, just to be out of your, well, to be off the screen for one thing, be out of whatever the loop is of the news of the day and all that stuff. And it's just good to keep your own company.
Very true. Well, thank you. You're a beautiful writer, and
thank
I really
you.
Enjoyed the story and the conversation. So thanks.
Thank you. Likewise.
Have a good trip.
Take care. Sorry I was late.
No worries. No worries.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.